You are listening to video description on the SAP channel. This service is primarily intended for viewers who are blind or visually impaired. To return to regular program audio, turn off the SAP feature on your TV. Now misty fog hangs over the ocean, obscuring the horizon. Titles appear. Tom Selleck as Robert B. Parker's Jesse Stone, in Benefit of the Doubt. A foamy surf washes over wet sand. Titles continue. Kathy Baker, Cole Sutter, Gloria Rubin, Stephen McHattie, William Sadler, Robert Carradine. Waves pound a rocky shore. Jeremy Ackerman, Christine Tizard, Jeff Geddes, Vito Riza. A bank of thick gray clouds darkens the sky. Wind rustles sparse trees on the rugged coast. At sunset, orange light glimmers on the horizon. More titles, with Saul Rupinek and William Devane. Music by Jeff Beal. Edited by Stephen Cohen, ACE. Production designer David Chapman. On the austere coastal rocks, uneven pools collect in ridges reflecting sunlight. A small boat anchors in a cove. A dreary mist shrouds a pier. Cliffs, inlets, and promontories border the sea. Waves break against the natural barrier. The tide combs through fronds of seaweed. Director of Photography, David Gribble, ACS. Co-producer, Robert Harmon. Produced by Stephen Brandman. Executive producer, Michael Brandman. Executive producer, Tom Selleck. Based upon characters created in Robert B. Parker's Jesse Stone books. Written by Tom Selleck and Michael Brandman. Directed by Robert Harmon. This program has been described by the Media Access Group at WGBH with funding from CBS. Described by Renee Ruthel. Read by Gailey Heidemann. Now a police cruiser drives along a foggy road. A small statue of a saint sits on the dashboard. The driver is a heavy-set officer with gray hair.
Looks like it's clearing up.
His colleague stares off, furrowing his brow.
What was the message when you answered the page, Skipper?
D'Angelo, why do you call me Skipper?
You don't like being called Skipper?
I didn't say that. I asked you why.
I don't know. Seems kind of coply. I'll just call you Chief.
Now that I have you back, I want you happy. Call me Skipper.
They drive along the coast.
The caller said some kids started a fire out on the point and they were worried about their house.
It was raining. Did they leave their address?
They hung up.
Probably
a crank. A police officer cannot afford to be wrong. It has to be checked out.
He hated me calling him Skipper.
Have you seen him?
I don't like him.
I didn't ask if you liked him. I asked if you'd seen him.
Nope.
Doesn't seem that anyone has. Not for months.
He didn't
like you. Why do you think?
Beats me. What's not to like? He made me do stupid things. He made me feel...
unlikable. He's not someone who should spend a lot of time alone.
He made me order a hat.
Why did he make you order a hat?
Because it was a stupid thing. He didn't like the color of our hats. He wanted one in...
navy blue.
Stupid. And on the back, he had me embroider.
Chief.
Can I ask you a question, Skipper?
How do I always know what you're going to say?
Yeah, you finished my sentences.
It's a gift.
Up ahead, a chain extends across the road. A sign hanging in the middle reads, "Look off point." The cruiser pulls into a gravel pull-off area on the side of the road and parks.
I sure don't see any smoke.
It still has to be checked out, Anthony. Do you remember where you ordered that hat?
You want a blue hat?
The police chief frowns, his face thoughtful.
You know, when I said it was a stupid thing, I didn't mean the hat itself was stupid. Making me do it was stupid. I could have been writing parking tickets.
I want a blue hat.
But you want Skipper on the back.
How about Chief? D'Angelo.
The police cruiser explodes. Flames consume the vehicle. Fiery plumes roil into the sky. Pieces of debris rain down around the car, trailing fire. Black smoke tinges the heat-rippled air. A view of the dashboard shows the cloaked Saint. The white-hot flames silhouette the small figurine. Now two men step across a wooden footbridge leading to a red brick house with white trim, situated on an isolated islet. At an overlook near the house, Jesse Stone sits on a bench, sipping coffee from an insulated mug. He stares out at the ocean, his Irish setter Reggie at his side. Deep lines etch Jesse's face, and flecks of gray highlight his goatee. Wearing a thick brown wool jacket, he shudders. The two men from the bridge arrive. Jesse sighs.
If you're lost, you might be talking to the wrong guy.
Hello, Jesse.
Jesse looks down.
Hello, Hasty.
Your front door was unlocked.
Oh, my God.
The older gentleman wears a fedora.
Your phone's disconnected.
It is. Councilman Hansen.
We need to talk.
Jesse studies the men. Later, inside his house, he pours two mugs of coffee and carries them to Hastings Hathaway and Carter Hansen.
They said he couldn't have felt anything.
Jesse draws a breath.
We wanted to talk to you on our way out.
Sorry, Mr. Hansen. How can I help?
You're such a fine boy. I know you didn't like him.
I don't think I ever said that.
You know, my daughter is... My grandson doesn't understand.
What do you know?
Nothing. State Homicide Commander's on the scene, and his official representatives of Paradise, we need to be kept up to speed, but he's not going to tell us anything.
You have no need to know.
I know that he is your friend.
Can you help us?
I have no authority.
Hansen's gaze falters, and he wearily gets to his feet. Hasty, a short, stocky man, steps over to Jesse.
He is my friend, and he's a good cop. He's not going to tell you anything.
Jesse walks to the kitchen and pours another cup of coffee. Hansen sets a blue police department hat on the counter. Jesse considers it, then meets Hansen's steady gaze. Later, a black Mercedes sedan drives along the coastal road. The car arrives at a roadblock, manned by two uniformed state police officers. The sedan parks, and Hasty and Hansen climb out. The officers approach them.
I'm sorry, sir. No one is allowed beyond this point.
I don't think you know who we are. We represent the Paradise Town Council. This is Carter Hansen. He's our president. His son-in-law was killed in the accident.
Jesse Stone gets out of the sedan. He puts on the police hat.
I'm Jesse Stone, Paradise Police Chief.
Temp, Chief.
No temp, just Chief. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Chief Stone, would you like to come with me?
I'm sorry, you'll have to stay here.
But we're the town council.
I'm sorry, Mr. Hansen.
Is William still down there?
Yes, sir. Two bodies. It's a crime scene.
I understand.
You're calling it a crime scene. Obviously, this wasn't an accident.
Chief Stone.
Brushing past Hasty, Jesse strides past the barricade and walks with Captain Healy.
That was a way to get back in the game. Back for good? I think we just settled that. Is this a great country or what? He said bodies.
Yeah, two of them. His deputy was driving them, Officer Anthony D'Angelo.
Okay.
You know him?
Fired him.
Hansen shouldn't see this. Nothing left to identify, really. Fire took care of that.
What caused the fire?
Explosion. Big one.
You want to kill a cop? Why be so conspicuous?
Talk to me before you leave.
Healy steps into the Mobile Homicide Operations Center van. A man with a medical bag approaches Jesse.
Jesse.
Doc.
You're back.
I'm back.
They won't let me do anything, Jesse.
What'd you tell him?
That I'm the part-time medical examiner. It's my job, Jesse. They have no reason.
You show them your card?
I only have my pediatrician card.
That would be a reason. Did you touch anything?
I didn't pollute the crime scene, Jesse.
How'd you know?
I always listen to police radio with my morning coffee.
That's good police work, Doc.
They walk to the burnt-out car.
I'm the Paradise Police Chief. This is my ME, Peter Perkins. May I?
The crime scene investigators pull back a tarp, revealing the scorched frame of the vehicle. Perkins flinches, covering his mouth. A body sits in the driver's seat, charred beyond recognition. Jesse trains his eyes on the scene, thoughtfully chewing gum. With casual steps, he saunters around the cruiser. The passenger's charred body is slumped against the door frame. Jesse leans over to take a closer look. Glancing at the hood, he straightens, then continues around the vehicle. Perkins presses his lips together, swallowing uneasily. He is a thin man with short brown hair. Jesse makes his way around the crime scene and returns to Perkins' side.
I know you didn't like Chief Butler.
I don't think I ever said that.
He had a kid.
Later, in the operations center van, Jesse meets with Healy.
What'd you think?
I think they're dead. Explosion came from the outside, from underneath.
If it was Iraq, I'd know what to think.
The feds come in on this, they'll screw it up. It isn't terrorism.
No, it's not.
A shelf holds the remnants of a duffel bag.
That was where the spare tire should be.
A lot of cash. What's in the packages?
What do you think?
I think a cop deserves the benefit of the doubt.
My guys will keep this in-house.
If you say so.
I say so.
Later, a sign outside a brick building reads, Paradise Police, Massachusetts. Healy drives up to the station with Jesse.
Jesse, this is a state homicide operation. Don't invent anything on your own. I always knew I'd get my job back. Fate wouldn't do that to me. If you say so.
Jesse climbs out of Healy's black SUV. He surveys the building warily. Healy drives off. Jesse walks up the asphalt path to the station. He reaches the double doors and tries the handle. It's locked. Jesse squints in through the door's window panes. He fumbles for a key and inserts it into the lock. It doesn't engage. Shaking his head, Jesse turns away. He makes a face, then slams his elbow into a glass pane. It shatters. He knocks out a sharp fragment, then reaches in to unlock the door. Jesse walks into the station, exhaling as he stands in the entryway. Lights flash. Rolling his eyes, he steps to the alarm keypad and types in a code. He stares at the device, then reaches into his pocket to take out his glasses. Squinting, he types in the code again. Jesse scowls. He glances up at the lights, then strides to a closet. He returns with a fire extinguisher and uses the bottom to bash the alarm circuit. He lowers the extinguisher. Jesse stares indignantly at the circuit, then sets the extinguisher down, removes his glasses, and proceeds into the station. He walks to the squad room. Chairs and benches line the perimeter. Photos and clippings are posted on a few bulletin boards, and an American flag hangs near one window. Jesse slides his hands into his pockets as his gaze settles on a dusty chair behind Rose's empty desk. Sunlight filters in through drawn Venetian blinds, highlighting the bare surfaces of the simple furnishings. Now a motel sign reads vacancy. A police cruiser drives onto the property, pulling up beside a man watering a garden. Jesse gets out, holding a coffee cup.
I'm looking for one of your tenants.
What's with the hat? You're acting like you're the police chief.
I am the police chief.
Since when?
Since today.
I know, it's April and I'm overwatering.
It's not that.
Damn shame about Chief Butler.
It is. Rose's husband.
Do you have a warrant, Chief?
It's not that kind of thing, Stan. He's probably on a monthly.
Well, we have a lot of those, Jesse, as you might remember. You also might remember I have a policy of confidentiality. It's given me many repeat customers.
Perhaps you could think of me as a former tenant.
Why'd you leave, anyway? You know, I fixed the leak in your unit, got rid of the moldy carpet.
Jim Gammon?
Cottage 30.
Stan turns the hose back on. Jesse approaches one of the cottages. A man in his 50s steps to the door.
Hello, Jesse.
His lean face bears a shadow of stubble.
Jim? Looking for Rose.
You didn't expect to find her here.
I did not.
You don't know, do you?
What don't I know?
I thought you were close.
We are close.
But you don't know where she is.
That's correct.
Jim swigs a beer.
She took my kids away from me.
Can you think of a reason?
Jim looks away.
I know a lot about divorce.
I don't have to talk to you.
You got somebody you can't talk to?
With a concerned look, Jesse studies Jim.
I know someone.
She sold the house. You're such a good friend. Find her.
Jim shuts the door. Now at the Paradise Police Station, a repairman replaces the pane of glass in the front door, carefully setting the piece into the frame. Inside, a technician tinkers with the alarm's wiring. Jesse stands in his old office, staring out the window. Sipping from a paper coffee cup, he turns to the desk. He picks up a framed photograph showing Chief Butler with his wife, son, and Carter Hansen. Jesse sets the photo back in its place. Noticing the answering machine, he plays the messages.
It started a bonfire out on the point. Okay, I'm worried about my house.
Jesse presses a few buttons and hits play again. Hasty appears in the doorway.
Some kids have started a bonfire out on the point. Okay, I'm worried about my house.
Where's Molly?
You mean Rose.
Why am I always calling Rose Molly?
I have no idea, Hasty.
So where is Molly?
She quit to have a baby.
Wait a minute. Didn't she quit to have a baby? When was that?
3 years ago.
So where's Rose?
She's not here.
Well, who's manning the phones?
No one.
You think that's wise?
I don't.
This is an emergency. I think you should call Rose, tell her to come in.
I don't think I can do that.
Because?
My sense is she quit.
No. Luther quit.
He did.
So where's Rose?
She quit.
How do you know?
Because no one's manning the phones.
Hasty sits down.
What do you know?
I know she left town.
I know. I mean about the murders.
How do you know it's murder?
Well, they sure didn't blow themselves up. What do you know?
I can't tell you.
Why can't you tell me?
Because I'm the police chief.
I represent the town council.
Hasty, you just got back on. Carter Hansen's the president. He represents the town council.
Jesse, how do you think you got your job back? You think Carter Hansen wanted it?
I wouldn't think so.
I'm very fond of you, Jesse.
I know that, Hasty.
Was that the phone message that sent them to the point?
You weren't supposed to hear that.
I think that Butler was mixed up in something illegal.
You're not a cop, Hasty.
What do you know?
Jesse takes a long drink of his coffee. Hasty drums the table with his hands, then storms out.
You need someone manning the phones.
Jesse's gaze drifts over the desk. In a gold frame is a photo of Butler's wife. Smooth blonde hair complements her smiling face. The next photo shows his son, about 8 years old. Jesse reaches for a datebook calendar near the photos. He puts on his reading glasses and scans the notes on today's date. April 19, 5:50, D'Angelo arrives. We leave to check out Bonfire, probably crank call. He turns back a few pages, more notes, notices on overdue parking tickets, and pick up celery and milk for dinner. Jesse flips the pages forward. He suddenly stops and flips back to April 24. A sequence of letters and numbers is scribbled on the sheet. 2AH10. Jesse rips out the page. Fade to black. Now at home, Jesse drops a few ice cubes in a glass and pours himself a scotch. As he takes a sip, he picks up the slip of paper from the date book and considers it. He sets down the paper and heads to the bedroom. The Irish setter, Reggie, follows. In his room, Jesse puts a tape into a VCR. Reggie curls up on a dog bed, staring as Jesse carries his drink and the remote to his bed. Jesse climbs in and pulls up the covers. He reaches for his scotch and takes a drink. He notices Reggie's brown eyes staring up at him and pats a space on the comforter beside him. Reggie settles onto the dog bed. With a sigh, Jesse plays the VCR tape. A black and white movie plays, The Last Hurrah, a John Ford production. Jesse and Reggie watch the small TV. In the film, a fighter stands in a boxing ring. Outside, silvery moonlight glimmers on the ocean waves. In the dim light, the police cruiser sits parked near the footbridge. On the islet, a few lights glow at Jesse's house. In his bedroom, static fills the TV screen. Reggie sits up, the dog's eyes droop sleepily. On the nightstand, a lamp casts a golden light on the empty scotch glass and the smooth handle of Jesse's pistol. Jesse lies in bed asleep on his side. Reggie bounds onto the bed and sprawls beside him on the striped comforter. Morning. Hints of purple color the clouds above the islet. Sunrise reflects in the serene water. In the bedroom, patches of light drift across Jesse's face. His eyes flash open, and he unsteadily pulls himself up, sitting on the edge of the bed. A breeze blows in through the window, disturbing the curtains. Jesse shuffles past Reggie, who now rests on his dog bed. Now the cruiser drives down the coastal road toward the crime scene, splashing through a few puddles. It pulls into the parking area beside the chain barrier. Jesse gets out of the car. He holds the door open for Reggie, who scampers out. Wearing the blue police hat with Chief embroidered on the back, Jesse takes a stick of gum from his pocket. He unwraps it, puts it in his mouth, and chews absently. His gaze scans the scorched pavement where the explosion occurred. The damp ground is mostly cleared, except for a few dark marks and some gravel. At Jesse's side, Reggie pants. Taking a few steps, Jesse studies the spot again. Reggie trails him. Jesse saunters away, his gaze now turning to the surroundings. Rocks litter the nearby rocky shore. The coastal road disappears into the mist. Reggie sits down. A breeze disturbs the dog's reddish-gold hair. Jesse lets out a breath. Across the water, trees cluster on a hillock. Jesse drops his gaze and works his jaw as he chews the gum. The police chief's brow furrows as he reflects on the scene. Now in a meeting room lined with wooden chairs, Carter Hansen stares out a window. Jesse walks in.
I hope I didn't keep you waiting. I came as soon as I got your message. My cell phone doesn't get reception at my house.
I always wanted a son.
Hansen turns from the window to Jesse.
Do you think state homicide is holding back information?
Couldn't say. Do you feel up to answering a few questions?
I've talked at length with my daughter, but she and my grandson need time.
I understand, sir. When was the last time your daughter saw her husband?
He left about 5:30 yesterday morning.
Was that unusual?
Well, not lately. My son-in-law's been putting in a great deal of time at work. He's been preoccupied. We should know more by now.
In an investigation like this, particularly with the death of police officers, they will be concerned that details would alert and inform whoever did this.
Somebody wanted to kill two police officers, and they wanted to get away with it. Why would they be so blatant? Why wouldn't they make it look like an accident?
I would only be speculating.
Well, go ahead, speculate.
I can't, Mr. Hansen.
I'm aware of the difficulties we've had in the past, but I'd appreciate it if you'd call me Carter.
Jesse nods.
When did you first hear about the explosion?
7:35, I got a call from State Homicide.
And you called Hasty?
Well, Hasty already knew, so we decided to go out there together.
Do you know of anything specific that your son-in-law was working on?
No. He kept so much inside.
I'm going to need your help, Carter. I will have to talk to your daughter. Will you tell me when you think she's up to it?
Okay.
Carter steps closer.
I know you're a good cop, Chief Stone. Get the man who killed my son.
Carter strides out, leaving Jesse alone in the vacant meeting room. Now Jesse meets with Dr. Dix. Reggie sits behind him in the office.
There were times I hated him.
Why did you hate him?
Because he wasn't me.
You mean because you weren't him?
He had my job.
Did you ever wish you were dead?
Yes.
Wearing a sweater, the white-haired doctor nods.
Apparently I wasn't shy about telling people I didn't like him. I thought I only thought it.
How do you feel about that?
How do I feel about that? I didn't like him. He didn't make me lose my job. That was solely my accomplishment.
Okay. Are you going to obsess about this?
Yes.
Because you're guilty about how you feel?
Because I'm a cop.
Good. That's relatively healthy.
Thank you.
Dick sets a cigarette in an ashtray.
I've lost my people.
What happened?
Suitcase didn't like Butler, so he quit.
And that's your fault?
Jesse looks up.
What about Rose?
She was my friend and I lost touch.
Did she like Butler?
No.
So she quit?
Apparently.
And that's your fault, too? Did I ever tell you that you have a hyperactive sense of responsibility?
Several times. Hasty told me the town council felt they both had been infected by me.
That guy is a piece of work. How can you believe anything that comes out of his mouth?
I sift through his words for partial truths.
Well, let me get this straight. He hires you because you're a drunk and thinks he can control you. You prove he can't. You send him to prison for laundering money for Gino Fish. He gets out of prison, starts up a car dealership with no visible financial backing.
That would be him.
What's your take on the murders?
You miss being a cop, don't you?
Every day. But being a cop was toxic for me, made me drink.
Being a cop's the only thing that makes me drink less.
Word in Paradise is that Butler was dirty.
Small town. So you think he was dirty?
I didn't say that. Cop deserves the benefit of the doubt.
Fade to black. Now at the Paradise police station, Jesse sits at Rose's desk looking at crime scene photos. One shows Anthony D'Angelo in uniform, the other a charred body. Next, he compares a photo showing the youthful William Butler with the gaping remains from the scene. Reggie calmly sits in a corner. Jesse takes a sip of coffee and sets down the mug. He picks up his cell phone and flips it open. In a kitchen, a woman with short gray hair picks up a phone. Behind her, another woman works at the sink.
Hello?
It's Jesse.
Is it as cold there as it is in Toledo, Jesse?
At the sink, Rose looks up.
I would have no way of knowing, Mary.
How'd you know?
I didn't.
It's okay, Mom.
Rose takes the phone. She has chin-length red hair and careworn features.
Hi, Jesse.
Hello, Rose. Why didn't you tell me your chair was so uncomfortable? I'm sitting at your desk.
Why are you sitting at my desk?
Because I'm the police chief.
You're the retired police chief.
Just police chief.
You told me you'd get your job back. You said fate wouldn't do this to me.
Not like this.
How are Chief Butler's wife and family?
You're hurt.
I heard.
No, I haven't talked to him. I'm trying to give him some time. Carter Hansen's devastated.
He loved his son-in-law. He loved him like a son.
Jesse picks up the death book page.
Does April 24th mean anything to you?
Yes.
What's it mean?
It's my anniversary.
Okay.
Why would you bring that up now, Jesse?
I didn't. I mean, I'm sorry, Rose. I was trying to find out if Butler was working on anything.
Well, he wasn't given to sharing. He was even worse than you.
Did he seem...
preoccupied? Yes. He even shut his office door sometimes before he made a phone call.
Maybe he was calling home?
No, he didn't shut his door like he was calling home. Is that helpful?
It is.
Is that why you called?
Jesse shrugs.
Don't shrug.
I called to talk to you. You could have told me you were leaving.
The phone works both ways, Jesse. So why are you calling now?
I called now because... why is this so hard? I called now because I miss you.
I'm sorry that I lost touch, Jesse.
Well, it's hard to keep in touch with someone who doesn't want to be found. You gonna come home?
I hope I can.
Be well.
Bye, Jesse.
Come back to Paradise, Rose.
Rose hangs up the phone. Now Jesse meets with Captain Healy in his office. Healy pours a cup of coffee while Jesse reads a newspaper.
Figured it out yet?
I'm state homicide commander, not God.
I thought they were the same thing.
You think how disappointed I am?
It's an ongoing investigation. All I can say at this point is we cannot rule out foul play. Nice.
I thought it was appropriately obtuse. I have nothing more to say at this time. Now, you could have been a little more eloquent.
Have you ever known me to be eloquent?
Not hardly.
So we bought a little time?
Very little.
How much was in the duffel bag?
We reckon about 100,000.
And the powder was heroin?
High on smack.
What's that tell you?
Butler was dirty.
Or somebody set him up.
You never liked him.
I don't think I ever said that.
Oh, yes, you did.
A cop deserves the benefit of the doubt.
Well, I can see the heroin. But the burn-up, 100,000 on a setup. No, he was dirty.
If he was dirty, who killed him?
A rival. One of the guys he was working with.
If you blow up a cop, it makes news. Why not make it look like an accident?
Somebody had a grudge.
Or somebody set him up. If the guys he was working with wanted to kill him, they wouldn't burn the money.
Yeah, but if it was a rival, how would he know he was blowing up the money?
And if Butler was a good cop who was on to something, you'd burn 100 grand just to make him look dirty.
I don't deal in this.
I deal in certainty.
Well, it's certain 100 grand's a lot of money to burn. Whose case is this, yours or mine?
Both.
Who defers to who?
It is state homicide's policy to defer to local authorities.
Good.
It's state homicide's policy to defer to local authorities when it is appropriate and effective.
Okay.
So, other than the fact that you think he's clean, what do you know so far, Chief Stone?
Nothing.
The explosion was caused by...
an IED.
You thought you didn't know anything.
Knowing and supposing are two different things.
We've identified 5 veterans, all with experience in explosives, all with criminal records, all live in the vicinity.
That's good police work, Captain Healy.
We're able to run down 4, but the 5th one, Thompson, he's closer to you.
So you're deferring to local authority?
I am. In this instance.
Jesse eyes him over his reading glasses. Later, fishing boats dock in a harbor. Seagulls circle overhead. A man in a knit cap shouldering a large duffel bag heads for a fishing trawler. Jesse watches him, sitting on a wooden crate nearby. As the man reaches the boat, he looks back. It's Luther Suitcase Simpson. Jesse smiles at him.
What's with the hat? Got your job back. Sensed that you did.
Did you now?
Actually, I read the paper.
He tosses the duffel onto the boat and joins Jesse.
What was he doing on the beach road?
He got a complaint. It was obviously bogus. The caller knew exactly what to say and not to say to get him to show up.
Butler would know that.
Still gotta be checked out.
He would do that?
Got him killed.
You didn't like him.
I don't think I ever said that.
Yes, you did, Jesse.
You going out?
A couple of days. Gotta shake down some new equipment, come back in, then Grand Banks.
Be careful out there.
You come here to tell me that?
Jesse smiles.
I did not.
He had a kid.
He did. Rose quit.
She did, last week.
Because of Butler?
Divorce. She had to sell the house.
She left town?
My sense is she'd go to her mom's in Toledo.
She went to her mom's in Toledo.
Suitcase nods.
We lost touch.
We did.
The men exchange a look.
You're a good cop, Suitcase.
So are you, Jesse. It's important that you remember that. You'll find out who did this.
Jesse reaches into his pocket and pulls out the datebook page. He hands it to Suitcase.
Something's gonna happen on the 24th.
Besides that.
Cop intuition's a little rusty.
Jesse gives a bemused look. Suitcase reads the cryptic note.
2AH10. Happened at 2 in the morning. My sense is that 10 would designate a sum of money.
He hands back the page.
You got a feeling?
Jesse picks up a brown paper sack.
Donuts. They're complete.
Suitcase takes the bag, smiling.
Gas off, Luther.
Okay, Dad. I can't go back, Jesse. I was born into this life. This is where I belong.
Suitcase nods and heads to the trawler, taking the bag of donuts with him. Jesse stuffs the slip of paper from the datebook back into his shirt pocket and stands up. At the dock, Suitcase unlashes the rope securing the trawler and climbs aboard. Jesse walks toward the dock, watching his friend with an intense frown. As the boat pulls out to sea, Suitcase returns Jesse's stare. Yellow writing on the back of the boat spells out, The Good Hope, 8 Paradise, Massachusetts. Fade to black. Now Jesse drives the police cruiser up to a 2-story cottage at the end of a narrow road. Untrimmed bushes and a few trees line the yard outside. The chief parks the car and gets out. He He approaches the door and taps on it. Jesse peeks in through the door's window panes. Looking into a dark room, he hesitates, then tries the door. He pushes it open and steps inside.
Mr. Thompson?
Putting his hands in his pockets, Jesse lingers near the door.
Hello?
Frowning, he slowly moves through the rooms of the cottage. In a small library, bookshelves line one wall, and on the opposite side, a dozen portraits fill frames. Jesse's gaze falls on the pictures, old glamour shots of elegantly dressed men and women.
Mr. Thompson, police!
Jesse turns toward a sound and heads into another room to investigate. Sunlight shines on a green plant, and a small TV sits on a bureau. Across the room, a door with peeling paint is closed. Jesse hurries across to open it. A black and white dog scurries out. Jesse briefly peeks inside, then closes the door. The dog races to a door that leads into the garage, jumping up and clawing at the glass. Jesse follows and opens the door. The dog runs inside. Looking into the garage, Jesse gapes and steps inside. The dog sits in the center of the garage, looking up at a man hanging from the ceiling. A leash loops tightly around his neck. Beneath his dangling feet, a stool lies on its side. Later, a police photographer snaps photos of the victim. Jesse walks with Perkins.
Herb, my medical examiner needs to be brought up to speed.
Thank you, Jesse.
Captain Healy enters.
Chief Stone.
He looks away from the body.
I was on my way home, so...
What happens to the dog?
Animal control will take care of it. I hear your medical examiner is also your town pediatrician.
His heart and gut are in the right place.
That's all that matters to you.
That's about it. You just put down your dog. Maybe you should take him home.
An officer brings over some syringes.
Sir, found this.
Yeah, good.
Healy and Jesse look up at the body.
So what do you think?
About the dog? I think it looks like he hung himself.
I think he hung himself.
Not the same thing.
Healy eyes Jesse. Now in a bar, a piano player accompanies a singer.
Wish I knew why I'm so in love with you.
Her hair styled in neat bangs, the singer wears a blue evening gown. She sits on a stool. Blue and red neon lights behind the small stage cast a diffused light.
Darling, save your love.
Around the bar, a few patrons sit at tables, each with a small lamp in the center.
Run away. If I were wise, I would run away.
The piano player's hands glide over the keys.
Like a fool, in love I stay.
In a far corner, Healy and Jesse sit at a small table drinking scotch.
Guy lives alone, away from other people. Only companion was a dog. Now that can be toxic.
Reggie's not my dog.
I was talking about the deceased.
Jesse shifts.
That's the best drink I've had since I was shot.
It's the only drink you've had since you were shot. It's too easy.
Some cases are hot.
And some are easy. I know the speech.
Okay. Thompson was a junkie. Small-time seller.
Who was he working for?
Got his knowledge from the military. And with the bomb-making stuff and the cell phone detonator in the cellar, I think we got a slam dunk.
Sounds like you're trying to convince yourself. Who'd he work for last time he was busted?
We think it was Gino Fish.
Okay. Does this mean anything to you?
The note on the datebook page.
No. Is that a clue?
No, it's my laundry list.
That's not funny.
The guy made the bomb. He killed the chief.
Like I said.
And somebody killed him.
Who?
Whoever set him up. You're an addict. You get a big payday. Next morning, you're full of smack and cooling out. But you manage to fight through it and conjure up enough remorse to hang yourself.
You're making my head hurt.
Cop deserves the benefit of the doubt.
Healy gets up.
Wife's waiting.
Think about the dog.
As Healy leaves, Jesse picks up his drink and takes a sip.
Can't do a thing. I'm so in love with you.
Oh, on stage, the singer closes her eyes. When she opens them, her brown eyes gaze serenely into the quiet club.
On a fool like me.
Jesse finishes off his drink and gets up.
Yet still I plead.
A flight of stairs leads to an upper level. Jesse walks up.
Darling, please save your love.
Upstairs, Jesse lingers, leaning against a brick wall. He takes out the slip of paper again and stares at it. Emerging from the shadows, the singer approaches and stares off. Dim light falls on her smooth skin. A melancholy expression softens her features. Jesse notices her and absently folds the paper. He puts it back in his pocket.
Lonely place.
It is. No one knows. I don't want to piss off my ex.
I used to do that.
So you said. And that you're still in love with her.
I am.
It must make it hard to commit to another woman.
Not for the short term.
Never met a man who couldn't commit for the short term. Most men wouldn't have told me about the ex-wife.
So they could get you into bed.
So they could get me into bed.
She kisses Jesse.
Doesn't mean I don't want to.
Don't get your hopes up.
My hopes are always up.
Do I have to call you chief now?
Only when you feel so moved.
Sleeping with a cop.
You've always been sleeping with a cop. I just wasn't getting paid for it.
She steps away from him. Jesse walks up behind her and leans in, kissing her shoulder.
Does anyone know?
Yes.
Who would that be?
Your roommate knows.
He won't talk.
Do you have time for sex?
If we hurry.
You never hurry.
I have a job now.
I have to close the place.
I have to open the station early.
That's sad.
She saunters away from Jesse, her hips swaying. His gaze follows her. Fade to black. At home, Jesse stands at the sink shaving. He mixes foamy cream in a small bowl, then brushes it onto his face. Avoiding his mustache and goatee, he coats his cheeks and neck, then lowers the brush. He takes in his reflection in the mirror. Exhaling deeply, he looks down, then steals another glance at himself. He turns to Reggie. The dog sits nearby, staring up with glassy brown eyes.
What are you looking at?
Reggie remains motionless. Now gray clouds loom overhead as Jesse drives the cruiser along a two-lane road. Raindrops cling to the car's windows. Jesse talks on his cell phone to Captain Healy.
I'm breaking the law.
You're driving and talking on your cell phone.
That's okay, I'm the police chief. It occurred to me Butler used a computer.
It was in the cruiser, not much left of it. One of my college guys managed to retrieve some of his emails. How do they do that?
I have no idea.
So far, none of the emails show anything incriminating or exculpatory.
Can you keep a lid on this till the 24th?
Why?
Because something's going to happen on the 24th.
Is that a guess? No, it's a hunch.
I see a difference.
A hunch is a guess that has certainty.
Jesse, you can't suppose yourself into certainty.
I would disagree. You said the guy who hanged himself might have worked for Gino Fish.
Gino didn't do this.
How do you know?
Because he's too smart to kill a cop. And it's not
his style. Is that a guess?
No. That's a hunch.
Healy hangs up. Jesse closes his cell phone. In his rearview mirror, he spots a red car close behind. Jesse slams on the brakes and does a U-turn. The car drives past. The cruiser does another 180 and follows the vehicle. The red car's driver turns on its blinker and pulls over. Jesse parks the cruiser behind the car. He unholsters his gun, readies the weapon, and slips it into his coat pocket. He climbs out of the cruiser and approaches the red car. The driver, a man in his 40s with graying temples, rolls down his window. He wears dark glasses.
License and registration, please.
The driver takes off his glasses.
May I go in the glove box?
You may.
He reaches into the glove compartment to retrieve some papers. He flips through them, then hands the documents to Jesse.
Arthur Gallery.
I prefer Art.
Okay.
Why have you stopped me, officer?
I prefer Chief, and you were speeding, Art.
I was not speeding, Chief.
Sure you were. I was speeding, and you were following me. You were also following me on the turnpike yesterday. Would you step out of the car, please?
Gallery opens the car's door.
Put your hands on the hood of the car.
He walks to the front of the vehicle and places his hands on the hood, keeping his gaze in front of him.
Why do I think you know this routine?
You have no probable cause, okay?
This is my town. There's no dash cam in the cruiser to protect you so you can toy with the Constitution.
Gallery smirks.
What, no clever response? If you're armed, you'd best tell me now. If you don't and I find a piece, I'll just throw it on the seat and say I saw it there.
I'm not armed.
Okay.
You're not going to search me?
I just did. What's in the trunk?
You have no probable cause, Chief.
Arthur, please don't make me start over.
Gallery reaches through the window for the keys and moves around to the back of the car. Jesse watches, his hands in his pockets. Gallery opens the trunk. Inside is a rifle with a mounted scope and attached flashlight.
It's my deer rifle.
308's a good sniper round. What's the light for, Arthur? You can't hunt at night. Where's the magazine?
It's in a separate pouch, okay.
Is the magazine loaded?
Yes, it is, Chief.
Congratulations, Arthur. You just passed the state test. So how long do you think it would take you to grab the loaded magazine, insert it in your rifle, chamber around, and be ready for the next deer? Or whatever.
I haven't timed it.
I think you have.
Gallery stares. Jesse hands back his license and registration.
You're free to go, Arthur. Drive carefully.
You're not going to issue a citation for speeding, Chief?
I am not. I'm going to give you a warning instead. Don't follow me around.
Jesse levels a stern glare at Gallery, then returns to the cruiser. Gallery's gaze follows the police chief for a moment, then he turns to his car and closes the trunk. Later at Dr. Dix's office.
Have you talked to your ex-wife?
I'm trying not to.
I didn't ask you that. Have you talked to Jen?
I haven't talked to Jen since before I lost my job.
Is that a good thing?
Too soon to tell.
Are you drinking?
I always drink.
Are you drinking a lot?
Probably less than if I've been talking to Jen.
So that's a good thing.
I didn't say that.
No, I said that. Why is this so hard? You come to me for help, and then you fight me.
It's my nickel. I don't want to make it too easy.
You are a subversive son of a bitch.
I guess if I'm drinking less, that would be a good thing.
Well, there's a breakthrough, sorta. Are you seeing anyone?
I'm seeing you.
Dix grins.
I have been seeing someone.
Is that a good thing?
Yes. It helped me stay together after I lost my job. We've become pals who have sex.
Do you like her?
I do.
Women usually want more.
Well, she's more afraid of commitment than I am.
Okay.
Paying you $180 an hour, right?
That's correct.
Our breakthrough came too early. Put on your cop hat.
He hands Dix the page from the datebook with a note, 2AH10.
Be careful with that. I'm hoping it's a clue.
2AH10, obviously some kind of code. Whoever wrote it wanted to keep this information a secret.
Butler wrote it.
One always reads backwards on notes of this nature.
How do you know that?
You want my comply opinion or not?
I do.
I used to do this kind of work for a living. H10 probably means a location, or a name in a location. 2A is a time.
What's that mean? H10 is probably a location or a name in a location. Which is it?
I don't know. What's it say to you?
I think it says Butler was on to something and it got him and D'Angelo killed.
Well, think it's not good enough.
I'm a hunch guy, not an evidence guy. If my gut gives me certainty, that's all I need.
Convictions are based on evidence.
I don't care about convictions. I care about justice.
Now in an office, the singer from the bar, Thelma Gleffy, sits at a reception desk. Jesse walks in with a coffee cup in hand.
Morning, Thelma.
Morning, Jesse.
She sneaks a look as Jesse strides into Hasty's office.
You called me. Did you see what she is wearing?
Who?
Thelma. I'm obsessed with her.
What about Sissy?
Oh, I'm trying to move on from my ex-wife.
As am I.
What does that mean?
It means I am trying to move on from my ex-wife also.
Huh. Yeah. I was hoping you could fix me up.
With Thelma? I would assume she wants to go out with you.
You know, the only reason that she works here selling cars so she can sing in a club at night. Do you think I should go down there?
I wouldn't do that, Hasty.
No, you're right. She'll think I'm coming on too strong. I might even consider it sexual harassment. No, I think what I'm going to do is I am going to sit back. I am going to bide my time. Play it cool.
He wears a light-up bow tie.
Why do you do that? It's who I am. So, do you think he was mixed up in something illegal?
It's the second time you said that, and could you turn that thing off?
Jesse sits down.
Come on, Jesse. The way he was killed makes it look like he was mixed up in something.
Exactly. It makes it look like he was mixed up in something.
Clearly, state homicide is holding back information.
Carter Anson said the same thing. They always hold back information.
Well, what do you know?
Jesse takes a sip of coffee.
Okay. What I know is that Hanson's going to get rid of you, Jesse, as soon as he finds somebody else.
I do not have a problem with Hanson, nor he me. How'd you know?
What?
About the bombing. He said you already knew. Why would state homicide call you and not the rest of the town council?
No, they didn't. Look, Hanson was in shock. All I knew was that something was wrong since I heard his voice. Now, he's just confused.
I'm sorry, Hasty. It's just the cop in me. He's pretty beat up by this.
Was Butler working on something?
Nothing I can find. Does 2AH10 mean anything to you?
That just sounds like some kind of code. He was very secretive. In fact, he was worse than you. Now, I can help you with his laptop. I know you're computer illiterate.
I prefer Luddite, and it was destroyed in the explosion.
That's a serious blow to the investigation.
Look, I know I owe you, Hasty. You gave me the job in the first place, so here's what I can tell you. I'm the only cop who thinks he wasn't dirty. The killer knew that Butler was going to be on the beach road and where he was going. Someone's following me around, and something's going to happen on the 24th.
What's going to happen on the 24th?
That is something I do not know.
Jesse stands up.
I can help you with this.
The chief starts out.
I'm very fond of you, Jesse.
Jesse hesitates on his way out. Fade to black. Now Jesse walks down a stark hallway to an office reception area. A stylish young woman with glasses and brown hair sits at a desk working on a laptop.
Hello, Amanda.
Hello, Jesse.
You remember my name.
You're on the list.
Your list?
Mr. Fish's list.
Can I ask you something?
Do I have a choice?
You called me by my first name.
That's not a question.
That's not a question, Jesse.
Jesse.
I know that's not a question, Amanda.
What was your question?
Jesse.
What was your question, Jesse?
I know you're shy and afraid to break the ice, so I'll start. Could I see you sometime?
No.
I see. Actually, that was only part of my question.
I'm sorry, was I rude?
No, you were direct. I like direct. Can I see you sometime, and would you walk over to that door and punch me in?
Because?
Because I like watching you.
I'm too young for you.
I'm hurt.
Amanda coyly averts her gaze, then walks over to an office door. With a hint of a smile under his mustache, Jesse watches her. A gray dress clings to her curvy figure, and her hips sway. Amanda punches a code into a keypad. She opens the door, then gives Jesse a smoldering look. He walks over to her.
Just coffee.
Jesse steps inside. Later, a man in a tie and vest leads him down a corridor.
Where are you taking me, Stephen?
Came to see Mr. Fish.
That's correct.
Taking you to see Mr. Fish.
Is he in an underground bunker?
I hardly think so.
You don't like me, do you, Stephen?
I do not.
They enter a room with a large swimming pool.
Wait here, Jesse. Wait here, Jesse.
In the pool, a man does laps. Beside the pool, a gentleman sits at an elegant table set with a silver tea service. He pours himself a cup. The man from the pool climbs out, and Stephen helps the heavy-set man in his 50s into a robe. The gentleman at the table shoots Jesse a look. Jesse watches as Stephen lights a cigar for the man in the robe, then leans close to whisper something. Stephen guides the swimmer to a seat at the head of the table, pulling out his chair for him.
Jesse Stone.
He beckons and Jesse walks over.
Hello, Gino.
Oh, I see your PPD hat has found its way back onto your head.
This is H. Henry Upman, an associate. Jesse Stone is from Paradise. He's the temp police chief.
Just chief.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Obviously, I heard about your former chief. It was a horrible tragedy.
His name was William Butler, and he was murdered.
I see. Is that why you're here?
Well, we haven't visited in a while.
I've missed our little chats.
He eats an oyster.
I'm sorry, I was busy.
Doing what, Jesse Stone?
Being preoccupied.
And why are you wearing the hat, Jesse Stone?
Because I missed it. I'm afraid I have more sad news, Gino. Would you remember a former employee named James Thompson?
I know of no such person.
Perhaps you remember him as Jimmy.
I know of no such person. Why do you ask?
Jimmy hanged himself yesterday.
How sad. So this is an official visit.
In a let's get reacquainted sort of way.
Mr. Fish will not be answering any more of your questions.
Upman glares.
How sad.
It's nice seeing you again, Jesse Stone.
Jesse walks out. Gino slurps another oyster. You are listening to video description on the SAP channel. To return to regular program audio, turn off the SAP feature on your TV. Later in his bedroom, Jesse carries his gun and his scotch to the nightstand. He picks up a file with crime scene photos and settles onto his bed. As he takes a sip of scotch, Reggie plods into the room. His reading glasses on, Jesse pores over the photos of the scorched cruiser and the gruesome images of the victims. He examines the 8x10s, one at a time. He closes the folder, tucking the photos inside. Reggie sits attentively. Jesse picks up a mini cassette player and presses play.
Started a bonfire out on the point. Okay, I'm worried about my house.
He rewinds.
Some kids kids have started a bonfire out on the point. Okay, I'm worried about my house.
He backs it up again.
Okay, I'm worried about my house.
Jesse frowns. He puts the cassette player down. Wagging his tail, Reggie climbs onto the bed and curls up beside Jesse. The chief raises an eyebrow, then awkwardly puts his arm around the dog. Jesse pets Reggie's thick reddish gold coat as they sit together on the bed. Now in a coffee shop, Jesse sits across from Amanda, Gino Fish's receptionist. She wears pink lipstick and her long brown hair hangs loosely around her shoulders.
What were you thinking?
Excuse me?
What were you thinking when you asked me out?
I didn't ask you out. I asked if I could see you sometime.
And the difference would be?
Rules.
Excuse me?
The rules between a meeting and a date are different.
And this would be?
This would be a meeting.
I'm too young for you.
You mean I'm too old for you?
Not necessarily.
That was kind.
I didn't mean it to be. It was direct.
I see.
No, you don't.
Okay.
I'm not ready.
I see.
Don't keep saying that because you don't see.
Okay.
The idea has always appealed to me.
I see. I do see. You're not ready.
Jesse takes a sip from his coffee cup. Amanda watches him with a rapt gaze.
Amanda, what's going to happen on the 24th?
Nothing, Jesse. I have no plans.
She casually drinks her coffee.
Okay.
Jesse looks away, drumming his fingers on his cup.
So why did you ask me out?
Why do you want to know?
Because I've kissed a few frogs in my day.
I see. You make me curious.
About?
About you.
Good. I like curious.
So do you like working in the field of boxing?
Yes, I like men.
Okay. Is that all you do for Mr. Fish?
I'm his executive assistant.
In the boxing business?
In the boxing business.
Must be nice working for the boss.
It is. Although Mr. Fish has a boss.
Mr. Fish has a boss?
I just said that.
And who would the boss be?
I don't know. I've never seen him. Clearly, this isn't about me.
Amanda gathers her things and leaves. Now in Captain Healy's office.
What happens on the 24th?
I don't know.
You don't know, or you won't tell me.
Does Gino Fish have a boss?
He's the sole owner of GF Boxing Promotions, and he runs the show on his dark side, and he didn't do it.
Is that a guess or a hunch?
He has an ironclad alibi.
What did he say?
He didn't. His lawyer informed us.
H. Henry Upman.
He's highly skilled in the art of criminal defense.
Guy's a putz.
Because?
Because he used to be a prosecutor, now he's a criminal defense attorney.
Did you pay Gino a visit?
I did.
Healy scratches his head.
My college boys are getting nowhere with the laptop. I think it's a total loss.
I know him's onto something.
What? Is this a hunch?
I gotta make something happen.
Whose investigation is this, Jesse?
I'm not sure that was ever decided.
Jesse gets up and heads for the door.
We're gonna go public with some of this in the morning. Maybe somebody will step forward.
I ask you to wait.
I never said I would or could.
Guy's got a family.
I know that.
Healy levels his gaze at Jesse. Frowning, the chief leaves. Later at Jesse's, Thelma drops a few ice cubes in a glass and pours a scotch. Wearing a silky slip, she passes Reggie, who's curled up on a leather chair, and carries two scotch glasses into the bedroom. Jesse sits on the bed.
I was right. You never hurry.
You sing like an angel.
Blushing, she smiles and leans in for a kiss.
Thank you, Jesse.
You're way overqualified for that joint.
You let me sing.
You ever want to wear that underwear again in front of a grown man, I'm your guy.
Thelma gets dressed.
You're different now that you have your job back.
Is that a good thing?
Ever since I've known you, there was a part of you that wasn't present.
And now?
There's a smaller part. You love being a cop.
I do.
Why'd you come to Paradise?
You haven't asked me that before.
I'm not cruel.
No, you're not.
Could be hurtful to ask a cop who can't be a cop why he became the Paradise police chief.
But you're curious.
You make me curious.
Paradise was my last stop.
From?
I got fired in L.A.
For?
Being drunk on the job.
He sips his scotch. Thelma studies him.
Your boss hired me.
Thought you put him in prison.
I did. He assumed that with my history, I'd be manageable.
But you're not.
No, I'm not.
His ex-wife's a real piece of work.
I have found that to be true.
She took him for everything. How'd he get the money to start a used car business?
That is a question for which I do not have the answer, and he is not forthcoming when I mention it. Does he ever tell you he's very fond of you?
Only when he needs something.
She hands him an envelope.
This wasn't easy to get under the conditions you specified.
That no one knew you were getting it?
Exactly.
Do you want to know why I wanted it?
No.
Because?
He said don't ask.
Thelma walks to the bathroom and checks her reflection in the mirror. Jesse puts aside the envelope.
I want to say something, and I don't want to scare you.
Fire away.
You helped me through the hardest time of my life.
As Thelma puts on lipstick, she stops for a moment. Jesse looks down. Now at an overlook, Jesse sits on the wooden bench with Reggie at his feet on a patch of grass. Foamy waves hit the rocky shore. Jesse holds the envelope, reviewing its contents. A steady wind carries a light mist through the air. It drifts past them as Jesse reviews a small bundle of documents. He tucks the envelope into his wool jacket and fishes his cell phone out of his pocket. He flips it open and dials a number.
I was thinking of stopping by. You gonna be around later? Good?
He hangs up and pockets the phone, then takes a drink from his insulated coffee mug. Jesse and Reggie stare out at the ocean. Choppy waves ripple on the open water, fade to black.
Yes, the car's in great condition. It hasn't been in any accidents.
Now Jesse arrives at Hastie's car dealership.
The mileage is very low.
Thelma smiles as he passes the reception desk and heads straight into Hastie's office.
And the original owner is...
Congratulations, Jesse. You actually made an appointment. Thelma is in particularly fine form today. I need to talk, Hastie.
Jesse, you cannot afford one of my cars.
Jesse helps himself to coffee.
Oh. Sit down.
Jesse takes a seat.
So, what's going to happen on the 24th?
I thought getting my job back would straighten me out.
How is the drinking thing?
I got wasted last night.
Are you getting help?
I'm not about to see a shrink.
Well, is there someone you can talk to or confide in?
I think you just got elected.
Hastie sits down.
I've been a cop for a long time, Hastie. My guts always served me, but I have to apologize.
For what?
I'm just not thinking right. You know, you were so persistent about wanting to know what I know, and you've never told me how you got the money for this place. You take two small, unrelated things, find your dinner and a bottle of scotch, and look what you get.
What do you get?
Well, somewhere around my third drink, I had it all figured out. When I busted you, you weren't laundering money for Gino Fish. You just pled to it to cover up something bigger.
Did you keep drinking?
I did.
And?
The more I drank, the more it made sense. You weren't working for Gino. He was working for you. You were the boss. You ran the narcotics operation, even from prison. And I felt it with such certainty.
And in the morning?
All I felt was a headache. I
That's when I called you.
Why are you telling me all this?
I owe you, Hasty. Look, it was a crazy idea, but I don't know, somehow made me feel disloyal. So, for what it's worth, I'm sorry.
I'm very fond of you, Jesse.
Thank you. I think I know where this came from.
Where would that be?
Oh, I couldn't face the fact that a fellow cop was dirty, that his drug deal went bad, he knew too much, so...
Yeah. You've had a rough time.
Anyway. Thanks for listening.
Hasty waves his hand.
Oh, good news. State homicide. Thinks they found a way into Butler's computer. They should have everything by this evening. I guess it'll incriminate Butler. It's gonna be hard on his family. I'll walk you out.
They step out of the office.
Wait a minute. Thelma, come here. You remember Jesse?
I do.
Thelma is in the process of closing a very big deal at Bentley Continental.
Sweet.
Thanks, Hasty.
Nice seeing you, Thelma.
And you, Jesse.
She looks away nonchalantly. Hasty watches as Jesse leaves.
I'm very fond of him.
Hasty returns to his office. He steps inside, partially closing the door. As he peers out at Thelma, a look of uneasiness settles on his face. He shuts the door and makes a call on his cell phone.
We gotta move it up. I know I'm not speaking in a foreign tongue. The 24th is a no-go. 6 o'clock tonight? Oh, I know that daylight is a risk, but risk is the price you pay for opportunity, my friend. No, I don't want you to tell them that. Just tell them to be there.
He hangs up. Later, Hasty turns a dial on a wall safe and opens the door. Inside, stacks of bills form neat piles held together with rubber bands. Working quickly, Hasty removes the money. He stuffs the piles into a large duffel bag, then closes the safe. Later, Hasty strides through the foyer of an upscale apartment building. He steps outside, carrying the duffel. His black Mercedes sits in the driveway, its trunk open. The doorman rushes to help.
Let me get that for you, Mr. Hathaway.
Oh, this stays with me. Thank you, Hal.
Will you be leaving us for long, sir?
Just a couple of days.
A lot of luggage.
Yeah, well, if my business gets complicated, I may need to extend my stay. I would remind you that it's none of your business, Hal.
Thank you, sir.
Hasty hands the doorman a tip. Across the street, Jesse sits in his car, peering through binoculars. The doorman closes the trunk and opens the car door for Hasty. Jesse lowers the binoculars. He takes out the datebook page with the cryptic note, 2AH10. He circles the H. Now at the waterfront, Hasty drives up and parks on a rundown pier. He climbs out of the car and takes the duffel bag from the back seat. Hasty walks toward a dilapidated old freighter and crosses the gangplank onto the ship. On board, rust stains the walls. Old ropes and other debris lie in piles. Hasty looks around, then drops the duffel beside him. He looks at his watch, 5:23. Hiding near a chain-link fence, Jesse looks at his watch. He squints into the distance, then trains his binoculars on the old freighter. He sees Hasty walking along the port side corridor. In the stern, Hasty drops the duffel. From his lookout, Jesse sips his coffee. He makes a face and leans over to dump it out. Jesse dodges the gunfire. From the deck of the freighter, Arthur Gallery aims his rifle. Hasty looks up and hurries off with the duffel. The rifle's crosshairs scan the area around the wharf. Hasty dashes along the corridor. On the upper deck, Gallery changes position. Crouching behind a pine tree, Jesse watches the ship through binoculars. On the deck, Gallery runs along the railing, toting the rifle. Below, Hasty races down a walkway and opens a hatch. Hasty takes off his sunglasses and proceeds through a dim corridor. Gallery trots down a rusty staircase. He makes his way through a gaping cargo bay. Around a corner, he ducks through the open hatch. Inside, he takes off his sunglasses and carefully positions the door behind him, leaving it slightly ajar. As Gallery makes his way through the darkness, the mounted flashlight shines from the rifle. He crouches down in a corner, settling in. He removes the scope, loads the rifle, and aims at the hatch door. Daylight peeks in around the edges, creating an outline. A few pigeons flit around the door's base. His intense gaze focused along the gun sight, Gallery waits. The door slowly opens and light floods the corridor. Jesse dives through the open hatch. The men trade shots. Jesse slips into an alcove out of harm's way. Gallery shoots again, then leans back and cocks his rifle. Reaching around a pillar, Jesse fires his pistol. He misses. Jesse throws down his police department hat. He shines a flashlight down the corridor. No one's there. Standing up, Jesse aims his weapon and with trepidation starts to move out of the alcove toward Gallery's last position. He takes a few steps down the empty passageway. He clicks on his flashlight, searching ahead of him. He shuts it off. Shiny gray walls line the desolate hallway. Slowing his pace, Jesse turns toward a doorway and looks inside. Pieces of plastic tarp flutter in a breeze. Looking down, the chief notices a couple of spent shells littering the floor. Elsewhere, Gallery moves through the ship, his rifle ready. Gallery pauses and looks around. Jesse stealthily makes his way through the cavernous rooms, his gun and flashlight braced before him. As he leans around a corner, he notices a closed hatch door. He bursts through the door. The beam of light from Jesse's flashlight reveals an equipment room. He glimpses someone just as he disappears up a ladder to an upper floor. Jesse fires. Holding position, he exhales, keeping his eyes on the ladder. On the upper floor, the ladder leads up through a cylindrical opening. Gallery stands nearby, aiming a revolver at the opening. Jesse's flashlight illuminates the tunnel-like cylinder. Gallery backs up, his breath quickening as he concentrates on the ladder. Suddenly, light illuminates Gallery from below. He's standing on a grate, and Jesse's right beneath him with a clear shot. Gallery flails and falls onto the grate. Jesse shuts off his flashlight and reloads his weapon. Furrowing his brow, Jesse lifts his gun again and steps out to continue his search. He makes his way toward a laundry room where a bare light bulb swings back and forth. Jesse moves closer. Finding the laundry room empty, he moves to the side and peers into an interior corridor where a hazy blue light wavers on the walls. Jesse moves swiftly down the hall. He closes in on the flickering light and finds Hasty's light-up bow tie hanging from a hook. Jesse pauses a moment, then hurries across the ship's mess hall and peers out a porthole. Outside, a speedboat races away, with Hasty aboard. Later, Healy talks on the phone to Jesse. They each read the newspaper headline, "Death of Paradise Police Chief Leads to Major Drug Interdiction."
I told you it wasn't Gino. I told you it wasn't Butler.
The deceased shooter, Arthur Gowrie, had no priors, but he was a person of interest in three separate
murders on three different occasions. Now, I could have told you all this.
If you'd give me a nap.
All I had was a traffic stop.
You could have called me sooner.
I wasn't sure what I had. Besides, your people got there in a timely fashion.
So what pushed you to Hasty?
Maintenance records on the cruiser.
Hasty's shop pulled maintenance on Butler's cruiser 2 days prior.
So you used, what do you call it?
Carefully applied pressure. From day one, he always assumed he was smarter than me.
So you knew he piloted the money?
I had a hunch. So in Jesse's world, there was certainty.
No. But when I saw his eyes, there was.
No word on Hasty.
From day one, I always assumed I was smarter than him. He's a resourceful son of a bitch.
He'll turn up.
You say so.
Jesse hangs up and lets out a weary sigh. His gaze scans the dark, empty squad room. Slowly, he steps into his office. Open boxes of belongings clutter the space. Jesse looks them over, then shuffles over to the couch and takes a seat. Reggie scampers in. The dog climbs up beside him and leans against him. Jesse wraps one arm around the dog. They both look up. Luther Suitcase Simpson enters the room, dressed in his police uniform.
Change my mind.
Fade to black.